Boy, do I have my hands full today. You know, sometimes it's very, very challenging trying to take complex ideas, especially when we've heard one narrative for so long, to even consider that there might be a different thought or idea on the matter seems almost impossible. But it's not impossible. All I want you to do today is keep an open mind. My name is Dr. Roy Morgan. Welcome to another edition of Health Essentials. It is just absolutely beautiful outside this morning. I hope you get to go outside and enjoy it. Probably you're on your deck right now, listening to the birds sing sweet music to you. Okay, let me pass this along to you. We hear so much talk, and this is, I don't think I have a day that goes by that this topic doesn't come up. And so all I'm doing is I'm just trying to think through this. Now, yes, it is true that I have my own unique perspective. And it may be that 95% of the population plus doesn't even agree with me on this topic. Well, what I want you to do is just consider the details, and I want you to ask the questions for yourself. Because I'm not trying to give you a narrative that's false. I think I am able to play both sides of the equation, although definitely this morning it's totally biased toward one aspect of it. There's just not enough time in the day to cover both sides of the story. Although, to be fair, you do have to, what if there's 95% of all the information you come up with is totally positive, but you may find 5% that just doesn't agree with the 95% of the information. Well, there's a lot of things we just don't know. But today, let's talk about health. Is it okay if you take steps to improve the quality of your life and your health? Well, if you want to go broke or go into bankruptcy, one of the best ways to do that is to become sick and have to go to the hospital. Now, I'm voting that you not go to the hospital. Even with the circumstances of our country and the world right now, do you really want to go and hang out at the ER from a health crisis? No. No, you do not. That is the place you go when you want to pick up some type of a germ or a bug that's totally toxic, that could wreck you permanently and create such horrific problems that you could just never totally recover from them. Just like some of the studies I've read about people that are recovering from this recent COVID-19. They've got so much scar tissue, residual scar tissue in their lungs from the ones that have been intubated and had just horrific cytokine reactions that they're going to have issues the rest of their life. But the good thing about healing is you can choose what you do. This is the body that God gave you. No one can tell you what to do with it. And if you want to be healthy, I would say this is a this might be a program that could be for you. Now, I realize that my take this morning, I'm going to talk about cholesterol just for a moment. And one of the reasons I'm going to talk about cholesterol is because we're going to cover the idea that when cholesterol levels are low, I know that we are told that that's the most advantageous position to be in, having low cholesterol, because obviously everybody knows that when cholesterol is high, that's catastrophic to human health. Well, I want to ask the question if that's actually true. Now, I start to use the word brainwashing or dogma, but I'm not going to talk about those things. Well, years ago I was reading a study from Hawaii called the HOPE study, and then they did one called the No Hope study, and I can't remember what the acronym or the letter stood for, but it was significant. But they showed basically that when someone has total cholesterol, when they're elderly, that means 75 or above, I hope I didn't offend anybody by saying those numbers, but when someone's elderly, meaning 75 or above, and their total cholesterol, when it's measured on a lipid profile, is 275 or above, well, guess what? They live a whole lot longer than somebody that has cholesterol that's lower. And so the facts are, people with high cholesterol, they absolutely live the longest. And I think it's okay if you ask the question, well, why is that? Or what would be some of the research behind it? Well, I came across an article from Dr. Harlan, which I like that name, Dr. Harlan. His name is Krumholz, Dr. Harlan Krumholz from the Department of Cardiovascular Medicine at Yale University. Now, this study is coming up on 30 years old, but he reported back in 1994 that old people, these are his words, I'm not trying to offend anybody, that old people with low cholesterol, they died twice as often from a heart attack as did old people with high cholesterol. Now, I'm not telling you to make a decision based on this, but I am asking you to question the campaign where we're taught to believe, or told to believe, that high cholesterol is the enemy, and we must fight that enemy by taking very, very powerful drugs. And so, another study I came across, and I don't have the reference on this one, it's because I didn't write it down, that's laziness on my part. But they did six studies, and they were looking at one thing. They were calling it total mortality. That means dying. Are you with me so far? And in these six studies, they made the point that there was an inverse association with total cholesterol, or what's called LDL cholesterol, which that's really a lipoprotein, but if you want to call LDL the bad cholesterol, I'm not going to argue with that. And so they're saying is, who dies and what are their cholesterol numbers? Well, there was an inverse relationship. There's two ways of saying it. This means it's actually much better for you as you age to have high cholesterol as compared to low cholesterol if you want to live to be very, very old. Now, you can't just look at yourself in the mirror if you're 85 and say, how much longer do you want to live, Larry? Or how much longer do you want to live, Sue? But some of these things are in God's hands. He has written the number of your days in the book of life, and for all we know, maybe there are many, many days allotted to you. And if you have your health, well, guess what? Things can go really well for you. You can be productive. You can say, what is the purpose of my life? And then you can go and do it. Now, when your health is horrible, that's when it's going to be pretty hard. So, when cholesterol is very low, you have a great chance of dying. But when your cholesterol is high, you have the least risk of dying. I realize that's not going to play real well with certain groups, but I'm not worried about that. My allegiance is to you and to what I would call the truth. So, many studies have found that low cholesterol in certain respects to human health is much worse for you than high cholesterol. I realize there is a point that high cholesterol could demonstrate an underlying health problem that's not being resolved. That's the way I would interpret it. So if your cholesterol is high and you demonstrate other problems along with it, like type 2 diabetes and... Anyway, let me go into this right here. I found Professor David R. Jacobs and his co-workers from the Division of Epidemiology at the University of Minnesota, which that's one thing I've learned. If it comes from University of Minnesota, it's got to be true. Those people don't tell lies up there. They're honest. A lot of them are farmers. And they fish. They fish on lakes that are frozen. That means they got to be tough. He looked at 19 large studies, and he tried to very simply evaluate 68,000 people, or there were 68,000 deaths in these 19 large studies, and they were reviewed by Dr. Jacobs and his co-workers at the University of Minnesota. And there's two points here that I want to make. One of them might be relevant, actually both of them are relevant, one of them might be really, really relevant for right now. He said that low cholesterol, and so if you go to a doctor and you have a lipid profile and they measure your total cholesterol, if it's 210, that is not low cholesterol. Low cholesterol, in his interpretation, was 160 or below, which the reason why I say that is because we are kind of preached and taught and told a line that having lower cholesterol is better. But he said the low cholesterol, it predicts a greatly increased risk of dying from either gastrointestinal or respiratory diseases, which the last time I checked, Having an infection of the lungs is called pneumonia, or one version of it is pneumonia. Not good. Having double pneumonia does not bode well for you. And so you know as well as I do, well, what I'm referring to is when cholesterol is low, you've got this increased risk of dying from a gastrointestinal or respiratory disease. But I'm extrapolating that probably most gastrointestinal and respiratory diseases, they have an infectious origin. And so if you've got some toxic organism living inside of your gut, and that leads to diverticulitis, or it leads to an infection, then you're asking for trouble. If you've got a staph or a strep infection or Klebsiella in your lungs, that sounds pretty bad. So when your cholesterol is low, this study is suggesting that you have a much greater risk of dying from infection of your gut or from your lungs. And so there's a relevant question here. Is it the infection that lowers cholesterol in these individuals? Or the flip side is it low cholesterol that might predispose a human being to infection? And so in order to answer this question, Professor Jacobs from the University of Minnesota and his group of researchers, together with Dr. Carlos Iribarren, I'm probably butchered his name, I'm sorry, what they did was, and I actually like this study right here, they followed more than 100,000 healthy individuals in the San Francisco area for 15 years. So a whole lot of people in the study, and 15 years is a long time. And so at the end of the study, those who had low cholesterol at the start of the study, that means 160 or below, they had more often been admitted to the hospital because of infectious disease. Now, what I want you to do is put yourself in these people's shoes. Do you want to wake up doubled over in pain, thinking, I'm about to die, my appendix is going to rupture, or I'm having a flare-up of my diverticuli, or I've got colitis, or I've got Helicobacter pylori that's burning a hole in my stomach and now I've got a bleeding ulcer? No, I know the answer to that. That's a rhetorical question. Nobody wants to have to go to the ER saying, I'm about to die from infection. So at the end of their study, following the 100,000 people, those who had low cholesterol at the start of the study, they had much more often been admitted to the hospital because of an infection. So this finding can't just be explained away with an argument that, hey, the infection caused the cholesterol to go down. Because how could low cholesterol, recorded when these people were without any evidence of infection, meaning at the start of the study, be caused by a disease they hadn't yet encountered? Well, it doesn't even make sense. What I'm going to propose to you is, this demonstrates that when your cholesterol is low, which we often think of as good, I'm telling you it's not, it predisposes you toward developing an infection. And so there's another group of researchers from Minnesota. This is Dr. Amy Claxton. And Amy is spelled A-M-I, which is a unique spelling of Amy. They followed individuals for 7 to 8 years. Now, in this study, they were looking at those in this study that became HIV positive during the first 4 years. And then they quickly excluded those. So they were going to follow these men for 7 to 8 years. Obviously, these men had certain behaviors that were probably really, really risky. I don't think I have to explain it. This is kind of a family-friendly program, or at least I want it to be, and I know you do too. But if you develop HIV positive or AIDS, it's because of a lifestyle or behavior that's just very risky toward developing a viral infection. So the men that became HIV positive during the first 4 years of this study, there might have been a woman or two also, that's sad. So they ended up with a group, those guys were excluded if you got AIDS during the first 4 years. They ended up with a group of men that were numbered 2,446. And so at the end of the study, meaning the 7 to 8 years, 140 of these men tested positive for HIV. Those who had low cholesterol at the beginning of the study were twice as likely to test positive for HIV compared with those with the highest cholesterol. So it's not like I'm trying to say that having high cholesterol is a complete panacea, be-all, end-all, do-all, but it is really hard to overlook this right here. When you have low cholesterol, you have twice the risk to test positive for HIV, which I realized earlier I was talking about gastrointestinal and also lung infections. Anyway, so maybe you could consider that lower cholesterol is not necessarily better. Just kind of hold that in your mind. Another study that I came across is called the Mr. Fit Screen, or the MRFIT. I'm calling it Mr. Fit. What they did was, in this study, they included more than 300,000 young and middle-aged men. I'm not really sure what the middle age there is, but it's probably like 30. I'm joking. And they found that 16 years after the very first cholesterol analysis was done, that the number of men whose cholesterol was lower than 160 and they had also died from AIDS was exactly four times higher than the number of men who had died from AIDS with cholesterol above 240. Folks, I'm not trying to tell you exactly what that means, but it is not advantageous if you're a man to have total cholesterol lower than 160. And so if you did in this study, there was four times higher the death rate from AIDS than men whose total cholesterol was above 240. Does that make sense? Well, four times is pretty significant. Isn't that like 400%? Those don't sound good numbers. If a doctor told you, we just did a lipid profile, we tested your cholesterol, it's 158. That's fabulous. And you counter with, I just read a study that said I have four times 400% increased risk of death from AIDS if mine's 240 or above. What do you think about that? Well, I think you've been around enough to know that there are certain narratives that are accurate and true and certain that may not be so accurate. And I think it's okay if we question. I mean, don't you remember the Bereans in Acts chapter 17? They studied the scriptures daily. They wanted to find out if what Paul and Silas were saying was actually true from the Word of God, and they were praised for it. Actually, they were called noble. I don't know if it really does justice for me to say you're noble if you question these things, but I think it's a good thing. What's wrong with questioning? Now, in the past, I have told you the studies concerning heart rate. And so if you check your pulse rate before you get out of bed this morning when you're relaxed and you're just waking up and your pulse rate's 64 beats a minute or 68 beats a minute, those are good numbers. It's not the only criteria, but if your heart rate is 64 beats a minute, usually things go much, much better for you long term than if it was 78 or above. And so the vast majority of cardiovascular problems are going to occur in an individual that has resting heart rate of 78 beats a minute or above. Or maybe what I'm trying to say simply, if you got more heart problems, you're probably going to have more cardiovascular death, which is, you know, leading cause of death in North America. So they know that heart disease may actually lead to a weakening of the heart muscle. The heart just doesn't work as efficiently as it used to. It does not have the capacity to have the endurance that it used to have. So what do you have if you have a weak heart? That means you have less blood pumping in the body because the heart's weak. Therefore, you have less oxygen. Remember, your blood is the delivery system. It's an ocean of oxygen that it carries to all the tissues and cells. Actually, your blood is also like an ocean of nutrients and components to rebuild your body. So, doesn't it sound logical to you that if your blood comes to a screeching halt, things aren't going to go well for you? Well, it's the same way if your blood is flowing at optimal speed. and it's able to carry enough oxygen because your heart is strong and it's well-toned. Well, anytime that you have a weak heart, the way that your body compensates for this decreased power or heart output is there's only one play. Your heartbeat goes up. Your heart rate has to go up. That's how your body counters this. So, going back to what I just said, could you find yourself buying into the idea that a rapid heart rate might be your first clue that your heart is struggling, as opposed to a heart rate of 70 beats a minute? Okay, which one would you have? 80 beats a minute or 70 beats a minute? Well, 70. I remember years ago I was looking at risk factors for women that had osteoporosis that couldn't resolve it, and having a heart rate of 80 beats a minute is definitely a problem when it comes to rejuvenating the bones. It's really hard to do. So even if the heart rate goes up, that still is not sufficient when somebody has heart failure. So if you're a patient that has severe heart failure, you're probably going to experience shortness of breath because you just have too little amounts of oxygen delivered to your tissues. And now when this happens, we got another type of problem. You have this buildup of pressure in your veins. Because when the heart can't deliver enough blood away from the heart with sufficient power, and what you're going to have is you're going to have fluid buildup. See, when the heart becomes weak, you can't drain the venous system, and so the pressure builds up. And so what you experience is there's fluid retention and there's swelling. Sometimes this can be very hard to explain to a person. And you can talk to them about diet, you can talk to them about stress, you can talk about exercise. And usually they counter with, well, it's not that stressful and it's not that hard, and I get enough exercise by walking around, and you know, my diet's not as bad as other people. Well, that doesn't matter. If you need a diuretic to rid your body of excess fluid, can't we just come to the reality that maybe your heart is not functioning sufficiently, so you have low oxygen? And when you have low oxygen, you're going to have increased pressure build up in your veins. Now, the problem with this is, and this is maybe one of the points I'm getting to, you may not have heard this before, but I think this is a point that's worth fleshing out. I'm kind of switching gears here, but it's still the same topic. There are so many studies and so many indications that it's a chronic bacterial infection or a viral infection that really seems to play the strongest role with chronic heart failure. You know, I'm rooting for you. I am your biggest fan. I want you to overcome issues that you have so you can have radiant health. So, for instance, patients that have severe chronic heart failure, usually when their blood is measured, they have very high levels of endotoxin. And when I say endotoxin, you're probably thinking, well, what is endotoxin? Well, endotoxins are also called lipopolysaccharides, and it is the most toxic substance produced by a gram-negative bacteria called E. coli. Sometimes that's called Escherichia coli. And so you're probably asking me, Dr. Morgan, have they actually studied the topic of infections and chronic heart failure? Yeah. Dr. Matthias Rockhaus and his team at the medical department of the Martin Luther University in Halle, Germany. I can't read all the German words here. Erica could, though. They found the strong, and this is their research. They found that the strongest predictor of death for patients with chronic heart failure was the concentration of cytokines in the blood, in particular in patients with heart failure due to coronary heart disease. Now, the reason they say cytokines is because when you have a bacteria living inside of your gut, and when your heart is weak, I mean, you have a toxic bacteria like E. coli, or staph, or strep, or klebsiella, or Pseudomonas, or Salmonella, or Shigella, something that's toxic. If you have reduced heart functioning, you cannot move blood at a high rate of speed or velocity, there's always the probability that venous pressure is going to increase. And so, to explain their finding, they suggested that bacteria, meaning toxic bacteria from your gut, may more easily penetrate into the tissues when the pressure in the abdominal veins is increased because of heart failure. Haven't you ever seen somebody that was short of breath and you look at their arms and their legs and their face? Their veins are bulging at the seams. And so if you know somebody or have a relative, I love them just like you do. But if they have emphysema or COPD and they're, look at the veins on their arms, they're bulging at the seams. It's not because they're physically fit. They're going to have the oxygen that they're breathing the whole time. So when Dr. Matthias Rockhaus, he said, well, why is this? He says, well, these people that have severe heart failure, guess what they have? They have a lot of endotoxins. Well, where do those come from? Well, they come from toxic bacteria. Well, why is that? It's because the heart is beating so weakly, you're not getting enough oxygen. That's building up back pressure in the veins. So these people have edema. And so the truth of it is, they said, well, what if they don't have edema? They found the same thing. They noticed something. This is an observation. And I know this is going to sound weird that I'm going to say it. But when the heart's function was significantly improved by medical treatment, now I did not look up what the medical treatment was, but let's just say it this way, keep an open mind. When the heart's function was improved by medical treatment, all the endotoxins from the toxic bacteria, they decreased significantly. Oh my goodness, sounds like we changed the environment. So too much pressure on the veins allows these toxic germs that normally would never escape the gut, they start passing through into the bloodstream. And then the bottom line is, if your cholesterol is low, you're asking for an issue. Now, this is the next thing right here. I know this is a little bit technical, but I want you to hear this out. What is one of the simplest ways to test the functional state of a human being's immune system? Well, what they do is they inject antigens from microorganisms. What that means is the toxic waste that E. coli or Salmonella would release into your body, what they do is they inject small amounts of that directly under the skin. So if a person's immune system is normal, you will develop an induration, which is also called a hard spot. And it will appear about 48 hours later at the place of the injection. It's like a little bump under the skin. Do you remember getting bit by a mosquito or a gnat and you've got a bump on your skin? Well, that would indicate that your immune system is able to counter it and go to that area and respond to it. That's a good thing. However, if the induration or the hard spot is very small with a diameter less than a few millimeters, well, this indicates the presence of a process called anergy. That's A-N-E-R-G-Y. And the reason it's given that term, it's without a proper response. It's a reduction or a failure of your immune system to recognize toxins or antigens. And so the reason I'm bringing this up is people that have energy, meaning they don't have the proper immune response to these toxins, they have the highest risk of infection and death rate in elderly individuals. Actually, this is found in people that have surgically repaired hearts. So Dr. Donna Vredevo and her group from the School of Nursery and the School of Medicine at the University of California, Los Angeles, they tested more than 200 patients with severe heart failure with five different antigens. They directly tested them with bacterial toxins, and they followed them for 12 months. The cause of heart failure was coronary heart disease in half of them, and the other types of heart disease, such as congenital, all because they could not get rid of the toxins. Now, to their surprise, the researchers found that mortality was higher, not only in patients with energy, that means they didn't respond, but also with patients that had the lowest cholesterol. So those are the two things they found. Number one, the immune system was just weaker than what it should be. So they found that patients that had the lowest lipid values, meaning total cholesterol, they also, well, actually, I didn't read that correctly. I'm sorry, I'm looking at this study right here from from that Dr. Donna. So if they hit total cholesterol, if their LDL cholesterol and HDL cholesterol, as well as the triglycerides, oh my goodness, those were low also. Now, Dr. Rockhouse, he came back, he did a study that was confirmed between German and British university hospitals, and they showed that the risk of dying with chronic heart failure was strongly and inversely associated with total cholesterol, LDL cholesterol, as well as triglycerides. So those that had the highest lipid values, they lived so much more longer than those with the lower. When they say inverse, that means you increase your occurrence of death when your cholesterol is lower. Personally, I think that's a very good point from Dr. Rockhouse. Here's another study right here. This study comes from the UCLA Department of Medicine and Cardiomyopathy Center in Los Angeles. So you already know at the outset, they're studying heart diseases of the heart. That's what a cardiomyopathy is. What kind of disease do you have? Is it congestive heart failure? Is it coronary artery disease? Is it a heart failure from a weak heart, from a broken heart? I don't know, but they're trying to figure this out. The study was led by Dr. Tamara Horwich, and she included more than 1,000 patients that had severe heart failure. So you got to understand where we're going with this right here. These people already had severe heart failure. It didn't say mild heart failure. It didn't say moderate. These were people that were in a very bad way. And what they did was they followed them for 5 years. 62% of the patients with cholesterol levels, now these were in their studies, so just bear this out. Think in terms of total cholesterol. After 5 years, 62% of the patients with a cholesterol of 129, that's milligrams per deciliter or liter, they died. But only half as many of the patients with cholesterol above 223. I know that's a broad range, folks. So 31% of the people with severe heart failure died when their total cholesterol was above 223. You know as well as I do, if you show up at a doctor's office and your total cholesterol is 223, they're probably going to have a heart attack freaking out over that. I don't think there's any reason to freak out in the general sense. But when the total cholesterol was 129 or below, 62% of those with severe heart failure died. I realize this is a very unique group of individuals. Not everybody's walking around with severe heart failure. But there's such a strong push to lower cholesterol. So what do you think about that? 62% of the people die when it's 129 or below. I'm referring to cholesterol. But when it was 223, the total cholesterol, only 31% died. I know these people aren't in great shape. Anyway, maybe what I'm suggesting is, this is a study that shows that low cholesterol predicts early mortality or death, even if the patients were malnourished or not. And in this study, they asked that very question. The people that are promoting the use of cholesterol-lowering drugs are saying, it's because the people were malnourished. Well, they accounted for that. So they took out the concept of whether they were nourished or malnourished, and they came up with, it's just as simple as this right here. Now, there is a genetic syndrome. It's called the Smith-Lemli-Opitz syndrome. I do not know everything about that, and I realize that, to me, this is very interesting. But one of the hallmarks of children that have this, the reason why I say children have this is because usually they don't live out of childhood. They do not make it to adults. So when children have the Smith-Lemli-Opitz syndrome, they're known to have very low cholesterol because the enzyme that is necessary for the last step of the body synthesis of cholesterol just doesn't work right or doesn't express. So they have a genetic defect, if you want to say it that way, or a missing gene. And most of the children that have this syndrome, either they're stillborn, that's very sad, or they die early because of serious malformations of the brain. Which I know that you've heard this before. Half of the dry weight of the brain is pure cholesterol. The children that actually survive birth and delivery, in this study, they say they are imbecile or imbecile. I don't mean that in a bad way. I'm just quoting the study. And they tend to have extremely low cholesterol. And the other issue they have is they suffer from frequent and severe infections. However, I don't know who's behind this, but I like the way they're thinking. If these children that have this defect and they have very severely low levels of cholesterol, well, guess what? If their diet is supplemented with pure cholesterol or extra eggs, their cholesterol goes up and their bouts of infection become less serious and less frequent. Isn't that interesting? These kids that have this genetic defect, if they're given extra eggs, they tend to live longer, do better, fewer infections, go to the hospital less frequently. Oh my goodness. I think this is definitely the way to go. Anyway, I think I've rattled on long enough. I've got like a ton of other research. If you want to call and ask me a question, the number is 903-586-5257. This program is Health Essentials. I'm your host, Dr. Roy Morgan. I think we're both getting educated together, right? You know, it was mentioned at church not that terribly long ago, and just because I forget the name exactly doesn't mean it didn't happen, but a woman came down with sepsis. And if I'm not mistaken, she was in her 60s, and they could not find the source of it. But there's a study that I'm looking at. Let's go to the phone lines. I'll come back to that. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Hello. You have reached KBJS 90.
That's completely my fault. I waited much too long. I promise I will get the phone this time. Sometimes I keep pushing the button. It just doesn't activate. I guess that's an excuse on my part. Forgive me. I'll try to push it more efficiently. There is a phone line open. 903. Here we go. Let's try it again. All right. It worked that time. Yay. Hi, I'm Dr. Morgan. Welcome to the program.
Good morning. How are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Well, I'm great. I just had a quick question, I hope. I tripped yesterday and fell pretty hard. And I think I might have cracked maybe a couple of ribs, and I was just wondering if you could tell me what I might could do to promote healing of those.
My number one favorite remedy of all time is a raw bone extract made from cow ribs or calf ribs, if that sounds better that way. It's called CalciFood by Standard Process. I have never seen anything work better or superior to that.
Okay.
Did someone trip you on purpose? Because this is not sounding real good.
No, I'm just not very graceful.
Now, ma'am, you don't have to explain that to me. I know you're a professional ballerina, and you did not trip on purpose. Somebody helped you fall.
I ran over my dog.
Oh, so. With your feet?
Yes.
I think I know how that worked out. Was it a Great Dane?
No. Very small dog.
Chihuahua?
No, she's a Cavalier King Charles Spaniel.
A what?
A Cavalier King Charles Spaniel.
I know what you're talking about. What is she like, about 12, 15 pounds?
No, she's actually on the large side. She's about 25.
Oh, you must really feed her well. Way to go.
Yes, she likes to eat. But she actually isn't overweight, but she's just tall.
Does she like to chase squirrels?
She does.
Does she ever catch one?
No, thank goodness.
Oh. Why? Would that disturb you if she did get a hold of one and eat it right there on the spot?
It would disturb me because I think the squirrel would hurt her.
Oh, you think it would be a little bit unfair, huh?
Yes, I wouldn't want her to get hurt.
Well,
or the squirrel.
All right. So, CalciFood. Yeah.
Can I call your office and can you order that for me? Because I don't think you can find that locally.
Yeah, you can call me and I can help you with that. My number's 903-586-8114.
And is there anything else I need to be doing?
Well, I mean, you're a girl, right?
Yes.
You may try some type of a sports, running, jogging, exercise bra, whatever that hardware is called.
Okay.
Just to offer some mild compression, do you happen to know which ribs are the ones that are hurting right now?
Well, I kind of landed on my right side, and it's kind of directly underneath my right breast where my bra would touch my body, the bottom of my bra.
I'm guessing you did not sleep on your right side last night.
No, I did not.
Probably won't for a while, will you?
No, probably not. It's very painful.
It's not like you can take and put a cast on top of those ribs to compress them and hold them in place. But I've seen people be very creative. They get the wide ace bandage sometimes. I think the name of the game is you're just going to have to try to avoid laughing or coughing. Forgive me for trying to make you laugh earlier. I won't do that. It probably only hurts if you cough or laugh, right?
Or try to do anything that kind of uses your core, like, you know, turn over in bed or pick up anything heavy. Or
I mean, you can still do those. It's just very painful, right?
Yes, that's true.
Did you hear anything snap?
No.
I saw a woman this week, and she said that they showed me a video. She was going down a ski slope. I guess it was like a round trash can lid. I really don't know what they're called. But she slipped, and she hit this embankment, and she had horrible pain in her right arm and shoulder and ribs. And they took her to the emergency room, and, you know, I kind of think to myself, if you're like in Colorado, aren't they supposed to be the most skilled at broken bones? Because that's probably all they see on the ski slope, broken ankles, broken legs. And they told her she didn't have a broken arm. And she said, well, look at this x-ray right here. And, man, you could see so easily how the bone was broken in half. And this was December the 30th, so I realized, 2 days ago? That would have been the 16th of April. But when I examined her, I said, does this hurt right here on the rib? And she just winced in pain, and I could feel the crack in the rib. But even worse, when I got up to her collarbone, oh my goodness, I could feel that like a big chip had been taken out of the collarbone. So I think not only did she have a broken arm, but she had a broken right collarbone and one or two ribs that were broken. But still, she's got very significant pain, so we want to try to promote healing. And that's one of the things I told her also was about the calcifu. Just to make it very, very easy for the bones to heal.
That sounds good. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you. I hope you have a good day.
Thank you, you too.
Bye-bye. I think you have to, and this may not be great advice, but I think you have to just carry on with normal activities, except for things that really cause severe pain. Don't do that. But you've got to have a little bit of movement. Obviously, I do not want you falling again and making matters worse. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Yes, good morning. I'm calling about my 30-year-old daughter. She had some recent lab work done, and there's two problems with it. Her triglycerides were 266, and her liver enzymes were 100 and 126.
What do you think that means?
Well, I say pre-fatty liver.
I would take the pre off of it.
Yeah.
It's not pre-fatty. It's probably, and I'm not saying this to be negative, but most likely, I mean, that's just the way the world is. We got to come to terms with reality, but she's got a fatty liver.
Right. Of course, they told her, no big deal, just cut back on some medicine she's taken for migraine, and they've got her on a beta blocker because she has tachycardia, and she's overweight, and of course, I told her, you know, the triglycerides are bad as well. But they told her that...
She's not listening right now, is she?
No.
Okay. The number one predictor of a stroke is triglycerides.
I know.
I'm not saying
I'm a
that
nurse.
To be... Well, yes, you're probably more highly skilled than probably anybody else I'm going to talk to today, so I appreciate your wealth of knowledge that you have, so... What is going to be our play to take care of this? Most likely, and can I just say this just very loosely?
Yes.
Most likely, the poor girl has just kind of gotten to a habit of being toxic, and she doesn't know how to get out of it.
Right.
And so what's our play here? Well, there's two or three things I'm going to recommend for her. Number one, and I may not put these in order of... you know, great importance, but I'm still going to say it's still going to help move the needle to what she wants. If I can compel her or convince her, now, when you said migraine headaches, of course, my ears kind of perked up. It's very, very common for fat to build up when we have a high copper to zinc ratio.
Mm-hmm.
And so typically, the easiest way to get copper is drinking tap water, drinking soft drinks, eating chocolate, and eating grains.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we just go more to a meat-based diet, I mean, do you think she would be agreeable to if you made her like a hamburger steak with onions and mushrooms and asparagus with butter all over it and broccoli? You think she would eat that?
I don't know about asparagus, but she'd eat broccoli, yes.
Or something that would be equivalent if you put a sweet potato in front of her.
Yes,
I told a couple yesterday that in India, they actually have 63% of all the cases of diabetes in the entire world, so they got a lot of people with a fatty liver.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the ways they're tackling that is they're doing one simple technique. If they can convince them to cook potatoes on the stove, and then instead of eating the potatoes instantly, they put them directly into the refrigerator for a minimum of 12 hours. And by letting those hot potatoes cool down, there is a chemical reaction that takes place where the sugar or the carbohydrate or the starch gets welded together by a chemical bond.
Yeah.
I know that sounds strange, but you're with me on that, aren't you?
Oh, yes, I know that. Mm-hmm.
And so if we could just get your daughter from eating potatoes to eating potatoes the next day after they've been cooked, cooled down, and heated back up, we'd cut the amount of starch and sugar by half, which that's huge.
Right.
And that way she could still have something that she likes. But usually, if you can cut out the grains, that's going to cause the triglycerides just to drop like a lead balloon. The other play that we have here is we want her mitochondria to work really, really efficiently at converting food into energy. Energy production is the key to everything. And so if she could, you know, I know this sounds crazy the way I'm going to say it, but with your daughter, I have got to convince her that she's got to use up all her energy a day so she can have some new energy that comes back into her cells.
Mm-hmm.
And what that means is she says, but Mom, I'm tired. I'm not feeling it right now. And you say, but Dr. Morgan said we're going to go for a one-hour walk and we're going to use it. We're going to burn all those triglycerides up. The studies on women show that for the first 10 to 12 minutes when they go for a walk with their favorite mother, which is you, they only burn carbohydrates. So if you go for like a 10, 15-minute walk, it's really just carbs you're burning. And, yeah, that's helpful. But once you start hitting the 45-minute mark, I mean, your body has completely flipped a switch. Instead of burning carbohydrates, it's saying, the heck with these carbohydrates. We're going to burn fat for fuel because fat burns real clean.
Right.
So every time that your daughter is just craving something to nibble on or snack on, I want to try to trick her and put a pat of butter in her mouth and let her suck on a pat of butter. And I realize that butter's fat, but the big play here is if we can train her body to start eating her, meaning the fat that's in her liver, then we can win with this and we can avoid diabetes. But most likely she's got a well-established fatty liver, and the good news is that'll shrink and she'll be radiant. She's probably already a beautiful human being and lovely in every way. But there's just this one issue that we need to get past. But we need to train her body to start converting fat into energy. So if I had my way, meat and vegetables in my mind is the way to go. If she could eat one salad a day, and for all I know, she loves salads.
Yeah, she'll eat salads.
Okay. So if we could just accomplish this one thing, we have to start training the body to convert fat into energy. If she exercises, man, she'll get there.
Okay.
Do you think that her feet and knees and ankles and hips are in good enough shape where she could walk for 30 minutes?
Yes. She definitely could.
Awesome.
Yeah. What about supplements? Anything? They told her to take Milk Thistle, which she was on and off anyway, because they've been elevated for 2 to 3 years.
Who is they?
Dr. Gulley's, well, in Mineola. It's the Christus Clinic in Mineola.
Yeah, but I still think that's a great suggestion. So way to go, Mineola doctor. So Milk Thistle is very protective of the liver, and I think that's a good call. What's probably going to give her the biggest bang for the buck, and do you mind if I just attempt to simplify this?
Sure.
She's going to need a certain amount of extra supplemental magnesium and zinc to make it easier for her enzymes to start flipping switch to say, oh, she wants us to start converting fat. Well, good. Now that we've got what we need, we'll start eating the fat that we've got stored in reserve. So you need magnesium and zinc to do that.
She takes both. She takes magnesium glycinate, but she does drink a little bit. So, you know, I'm thinking it's still not enough.
Maybe. Oh, no. Drinking water is perfectly fine, ma'am. And drinking herbal tea is fine. I'm joking. I'm sorry.
I know. Yeah.
The herb that will give the biggest bang for the buck is called gymnema. G-Y-M-N-E-M-A, gymnema. Her triglycerides will probably be cut in half. She'll go from 266 to probably 150 in about a week or two if she does that. But the grains are the key, and so her body is probably hardwired of converting grain into pure fat. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you ever heard me say this before, but I find it sort of comical, and that's just because I probably have a twisted sense of humor, but farmers and ranchers said, what can we do to fatten up our cows on the feedlot? And they said, oh, we've got it. Brilliant. Why didn't we think of this before? We're going to put coconut oil in their feed, and look at them. They're going to balloon up because that's pure fat. Well, guess what happened? It was the opposite. The cows were more satisfied. They ate less, and they became leaner. So you can see where I'm going with this. If we want to fatten up a cow or a hog, what are we going to give them?
Grains.
Yeah, exactly. I'm probably lumping corn into that category also, but then again, I think corn is a grain. So we've got to get her body moving more. We've got to put the right type of fuel in her body. And actually, that might be the most critical step. But if she could start falling in love with what's called dandelion tea, that'll go a long way to helping her. And if she could fall in love with squeezing the juice of one organic lemon per cup of tea, then we can start to dissolve all that gunk in the liver.
Okay.
Actually, gunk is not like a real medical word, but I use it all the time, and I think people know what I mean.
Right.
We're just going to clean all that stuff out. So if she could start doing that, walking every day, doing some type of exercise every single day, every day is an opportunity for her to train. If she could eat one green salad, I would just be ecstatic. I would tell her to fall in love with steak and hamburger patties and eggs, which I know this is probably making a... She likes those, does she?
Yes,
Does she like them more than asparagus?
Yes.
A little, huh?
Yeah.
But whatever vegetables that she has in her plate, let's just say it's a sweet potato and a potato and broccoli, put butter on it. She could literally put grass-fed butter on anything that she puts in her mouth, and she will be able to extract more goodness. But I know this sounds nuts, but it's true. Butter burns very, very clean, and you can't store it. Now, if you eat carbohydrates and grain, oh, my goodness. Your body can store corn like there's no tomorrow.
Right. Okay.
So gymnema is going to give her a big bang for the buck, but what she decides in her mind... You know, really, there's only one question she has to ask herself right now. I don't know what her name is, but can I just call her Ashley for short?
Mm-hmm.
If she says to herself, Ashley, what are you going to do? Or what are you willing to do? That's the question, because she's got a serious problem. And this is not going to go well unless something changes. And I vote we use the wits that God's given us, and we try to take steps to correct this or turn the ship around before there's a shipwreck.
Yes, it scares me to death.
Well, and I'm not trying to add to that. I'm really not. I know I'm kind of blunt sometimes, but we've got one play, and that's to turn her health around right now. And if we had 3 weeks to work on this, we could turn all this around the right direction. Now, she's not going to go from 225 pounds down to 130 her normal weight in 2 weeks.
No.
But there's no reason why we can't do 6 to 9 pounds a month weight loss.
Yes.
Or 5 pounds. 5 pounds would mean that her body is moving in the right direction.
Yeah.
And actually, you got to do quite a few things right to get 5 pound weight loss.
Yes.
She's probably texting you right now saying, Mom, I just had this brilliant plan. You and I are going to make salads for supper tonight, and we're going to go for a long walk, and we're going to talk about what I'm going to do to help myself. Am I right about that?
I don't think so, but anyway, I'm going to tell her what you said. She trusts your opinion.
Oh, she does. Well, how sweet.
Her grandma is one of your patients and stuff. So.
So we can psychologically manipulate her that way into getting well, right?
Exactly. Let's hope so. Yes.
Well, there's nothing so powerful as deciding what am I willing to do to correct this. And if she's honest with her that way, then she can start writing a list down. And actually, when people are stuck and don't know what to do, if they start writing things down, that's very healing to the mind. It helps you see the clarity.
Right.
So if all this is reversed, you have a brand spanking new body to work with, and this is the only one she's ever going to get.
That's right.
But thank you so much for your phone call.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate it.
All righty. Have a good day.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, there's a phone line officially open at 903-586-5257. This program is Health Essentials. I'm your host, Dr. Roy Morgan. Maybe that's a question we can all ask ourselves. I'm going to ask myself, Roy, what are you willing to do to correct the situation? What is the best play? Sometimes you got to take the emotions out of it because they don't do any good. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning. This is Louisa. How are you?
Good.
I want to ask you something.
Are you calling from an American county or a foreign country?
I'm calling for actually a foreign sister.
Okay, good.
Just right quick, we know the time is going, but she has rheumatoid arthritis. And she started taking vitamin D, but the one she has is mixed with calcium, and I don't know if it's actually going to be good for her, and she wants to know how much dosage will be safe for her.
Vitamin D3 is a fat-soluble vitamin. You've got to have it, especially with an autoimmune condition like rheumatoid. But what she probably needs even more importantly, it's called vitamin K2. Sometimes it's called minoquinone.
Okay.
And so if she took about 10,000 IUs of vitamin D3.
Okay.
And
that is safe for her, huh?
Yes. But as long as she's taking sufficient amounts of K2.
Okay.
So I'd say probably about 1,000 micrograms of K2 would get the job done.
Okay.
She will probably tell you. She may say it in Italian.
Yeah.
Remember, Roy does not speak Italian because when I do, it sounds like curse words, which is not appropriate. even though I don't know what I'm saying in Italian. But anyway, but if she would take the vitamin K2 in therapeutic amounts and maybe also take a rich source of fat-soluble vitamins, that'd be called cod liver oil.
Okay.
That would give her the biggest bang for the buck. Now, I've had a lot of cases of rheumatoid to experiment on over the years, and usually the number one food that just triggers a horrible reaction is going to be wheat or grains and nightshades. Nightshades are tomatoes, and from what I can tell, Italian people don't really like their tomatoes very much, do they?
Yeah, right.
Or is that like the top food they eat?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, tomatoes, tomato sauce, paste.
Mm-hmm. So is the calcium that's in that?
Yeah, that's
vitamin
not.
No,
it's not. And I'm sorry, okay. I didn't. But you're way ahead of the curve on this. Okay. If she consumes calcium as supplement, that's just going to add insult to injury and make her hurt worse.
Right.
Because the calcium is going to precipitate in the joints, and that's what the K2 does.
Right.
The K2 helps push the calcium out, which is what she wants.
Okay. Even if she has a little osteoporosis, right?
Yeah, exactly. Right. Even if she does. And actually, magnesium and K2, they are so much more powerful, along with cod liver oil, at rebuilding your bones.
Okay.
I read a study the other day. I know I'm not trying to get sidetracked, but you'll listen to me, I know. In this study, they had women with rheumatoid just fast on water only for 3 days, and 87% of them said they felt a whole lot better, which was kind of proof that maybe something they were eating was not good for their immune system or their gut. Does that make sense?
I see. Yes. Yes, it does. Okay.
Well, thanks for your call.
Thank you, Dr. Morgan. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
thank you so
much. Thank you very much. Have a good day, and I appreciate your phone call. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.